The virus that causes COVID-19 is teeny, right? It's a virus. It's small enough to invade our cells. And if we think too hard about the fact that we can't see it, we can start to worry that it could be lurking everywhere. That line of thought can make a person anxious about going to the grocery store and bringing food home because someone else has touched that food to scan the barcode or even just to stock it on the shelves. So where's the sweet spot between too cautious and too lax? We're finding out here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent, and we want to hear from you. Are you taking extra precautions during your trips to the grocery store or maybe when you're unpacking those purchases at home? Tell us what you're doing and why. What questions do you have about proper shopping habits so that you can help protect yourself and your family? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Our guest is Donald Schaffner. He's a professor of food science at Rutgers University and the host of the podcast Food Safety Talk. Don, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, Keely. It's a pleasure to be here.
There is no shortage of advice circulating right now online about the right way to shop for groceries during this pandemic. Is there a risk of catching this new coronavirus from food we buy at the grocery store?
That's an excellent question. So right now, every case of coronavirus that we know of has been linked to transmission from a person who was infected. We don't know of any cases that have been transmitted by food or by touching food packaging or for any kind of transmission like that. I do want to say, though, there is potential risk in going to the grocery store, not because there's contaminated food there, but that there might be people there who are sick with coronavirus.
Well, let's talk more about that then. If the biggest risk of going grocery shopping is being around other people, then what are the right strategies for us to take when we're navigating those aisles?
Well, there's a couple of things that I would suggest. So the first thing I would suggest starts before you even go to the store, right? So make a list. You should know what you want to get in the store so you can move through the store as quickly and efficiently as possible. Just keep moving and get out of the way. My local grocery store has hand sanitizer at the entrance. I will use that, not because that's going to protect me while I'm in the store, but on the off chance that I'm bringing coronavirus in on my hands, it's going to help to mitigate that risk. And then I'll move through the store, as I said, quickly getting all the groceries I need and then check out. On the way out of the store, I will also take a hit of hand sanitizer just on the off chance that I did pick up anything on my hands. While I'm in the store, I'm going to practice appropriate social distancing. I'm going to try to stay 6 feet away from people as best I can. And then also the other thing I'm suggesting is everybody should just maybe relax a little bit and try to be patient. I mean, try to be quick, but try to be patient. Don't yell at the people that are working in the store. They're doing the best job that they can. They're trying really hard to make sure that we have all the food we need. So just, you know, try to cut everybody a break, too.
Yeah, they're definitely on the front lines. Is it a good idea to wipe down the cart or the basket handles that you encounter in the store then?
That's an excellent question. So when I go shopping, I try to use reusable bags, so I'll bring my own bags. Now, I know that some states have banned those, and some stores are banning mm-hmm. them as well. I don't think that there's any real science behind that, and fortunately for me, my local store still lets me use my reusable bags, and that's a great risk reduction measure because then I'm not touching carts or anything else that anyone has handled. Again, another really good practice by my local grocery store is they are sanitizing all of those grocery carts in between use. And so if you pick up a grocery cart inside the store, you know that it's been sanitized. If you bring in a cart from the outside, they'll be right there at the door offering to sanitize it for you. So those are a couple of good risk mitigation measures there as well. I suppose there are some people that are bringing their, if your store doesn't sanitize the handles of the grocery carts, some people are bringing their own sanitizer. I suppose that's an option as well. But, again, it's good if the store can do it for you.
Don Schaffner is a professor of food science at Rutgers University, and we're talking about smart ways to minimize our exposure to the new coronavirus and anything else while we're shopping at the grocery store. And we're taking your questions about how to shop smart and also how to make sure that the food that you bring home is safe. Are you eating fewer fresh vegetables and fruits because you worry about what might be on it? How have you changed your shopping habits or the things that you're buying because you're concerned? Help us figure out, what the right amount of concern is and how to best handle your food by calling 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email at ideas@wpr.org. We've seen some different advice on how to handle the food. One of the more extreme ways is that there are people who have suggested you wipe down all grocery items with disinfectant before them putting away, or even further, others have said you should leave them outside or in the garage for up to 3 days. Do you see these steps helping?
Personally, I don't see those steps helping at all. So let's talk about the leaving outside for 3 days. That's based on some research that was recently published in the New England Journal of Medicine that showed that on certain surfaces, the virus can be there for 3 days. 3 days is not exactly the right way to look at that. You really have to focus on the half-life of the virus on the surface. But more importantly than that, I don't know what the weather is like there in Wisconsin, but here in New Jersey, it's pretty cold outside. And one of the things that we know about the virus is that it survives better under cold conditions. And so if I put those groceries in my garage for 3 days at 40 or 45 degrees Fahrenheit, the virus concentration is not going to change all that much. That's not a terribly smart or effective risk mitigation measure. And as you mentioned, people are spraying down the outside of their packages with disinfectant. I'm not doing any of that. I think that that's overkill. Again, if you are worried about that there might be coronavirus on the outside of your food packaging, my suggestion is after you remove the food from the shopping bags and put it on your shelves, wash your hands or use hand sanitizer. The probability that there's coronavirus there is rather small anyway, and even if it is there, washing your hands will get rid of it. Like I said, I want to stress again, the place where you'll get coronavirus is being next to a person in the grocery store who is actively shedding the virus. That's really where the risk comes from.
Chris from Port Wing wants to join our conversation now. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, thanks for the wonderful topic and your nice guest. One of the things that I've noticed has happened at some stores, like in Ashland, our co-op will give you curbside pickup, so you can call in and order and then drive up to the co-op. They'll come out and put the food in your trunk. You won't even have to get out of your car, and you can pay for it and not have to go into the store. And then, of course, many stores are offering senior hours so people at risk who are older can go in and shop at a less crowded time, and definitely ways that we could control the personnel flow through would be helpful for sure.
Yeah, Chris, thank you so much for the perspective from your part of Wisconsin. And Don, certainly the senior hours and the curbside pickup, what you're talking about with not minimizing necessarily your exposure to food, but to, having to accidentally like touch someone else's hand when they hand you a grocery bag or be within the vicinity of someone who happens to cough or sneeze.
Yeah, those are both excellent risk mitigation measures. So if they're available where you are, I certainly encourage you to take advantage of it. And then while we're talking about elderly people shopping, my parents are both in their 80s, and my recommendation to them is, hey, you guys really just shouldn't even be going to the grocery store. So I don't live near them, but other family members do, and so they're doing the shopping for them. And then, of course, even though they would love to give their granddaughter a hug, they practice appropriate social distancing because she may be carrying the virus. And so when she delivers the groceries, they just wave to each other from 6 feet away, and she sets the groceries down. So
delivery among families or even with those services, another opportunity. Food safety scientist Don Schaffner stays with us as we figure out which precautions make sense to keep our food safe during this COVID-19 pandemic. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234 to join in. We continue this conversation here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. Getting groceries for our families is necessary for staying healthy, and handling those goods properly is always important. But sometimes we forget and get too comfortable with a relatively safe and robust food supply. Now that COVID-19 spreads so easily, we're looking at the food that we eat and how we handle it to try to figure out the safest way to get the nutrition we need. Rutgers University food science professor Don Schaffner is answering our questions about shopping for those meals and making sure our food is safe. And James from Kimberly wants to share his experience. Hi, James.
Hello. Thanks for getting me on. And I definitely like the program. I was just calling to say that as far as shopping, we first got when the initial thing came out with the COVID-19, we got caught up in it and kind of stocked up on stuff. But ever since then, we've definitely scaled back on that. But as far as the food we were eating or buying, we haven't changed any of that around here. Well, my family. And when we go to clean, we're not afraid of anything being on the produce or the fruit, because we always, just like everybody should do anyhow, just clean the fruit off and the produce when you get it, because of pesticides that might be on it, or anything like that. So I was just calling to say that, nothing's business as usual for us. And just, everybody, I just want to tell everybody to stay safe and flatten the curve. And thanks for having me on.
Yeah, James, thanks for bringing that up. And Don, James mentions, well, but we always wash our produce because this is just a good practice. That is something that we should continue doing.
Absolutely. You were washing your produce before, you'll be washing it now, and you'll wash it after the pandemic is over. My only recommendation there is some advice saying to use circulating, say use soap. Absolutely do not use soap to wash your produce. Soap is designed for hands and for dishes. If you ingest soap accidentally, it can cause nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea, and you certainly don't want any of those things. The other comment that James made was about stockpiling or buying a lot of food. Everybody should realize that there's plenty of food in the food supply chain, and so it's important that you buy what you need. Don't maybe buy a little bit more than you would normally, but don't excessively stockpile, because that's just going to waste food, and that food could go to people that maybe really do need it. So get what you need, but don't stockpile.
Okay, and we have another question here from Linda in Madison. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I'm calling about bringing food or milk and dairy products and all the things you take out of coolers. Is it all right to just bring them home and put them into your refrigerator, or do they have to spend time in a cooler out in your garage and wait 24 hours and then bring them in? And should you be rinsing them off before you put them in the refrigerator? I just don't. And I wanted to also comment that we're the same age as your guest's parents, and we have a daughter and son-in-law who are shopping for us the same way.
Oh, so, excellent. Good, Linda. I'm glad you're saying safe. And what about those cold products, Don? Should we wipe them down? And I guess the flip side is there any harm to wiping them down?
Well, so here's the thing. There's no harm to wiping them down. I did post a tweet thread that kind of went viral around this issue, and I got feedback from so many people saying, thank you for telling me I didn't have to wipe everything down, because it was taking 2 hours every time I went shopping, and it was causing me stress and anxiety. And so I guess my advice to people is you don't have to wipe stuff down, but if it makes you feel better to do it, then hey, and you've got the time, that's fine. Go ahead and do it. Just, don't use harmful chemicals that you might breathe in while you're doing that. Certainly the whole idea of storing your milk in the fridge for 24 hours, again, if the virus is there, which it probably is not, storing it in the refrigerator for 24 hours is not going to cause it to inactivate. And so my advice is just take it and put it right into your home fridge. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm advising that my 80-plus-year-old parents do as well.
Yeah, and as we wrap up, what's the takeaway for people? Because it is scary to think that I might be bringing something into my home that could hurt my family. It just is.
Oh, absolutely, and I understand why people are concerned. And I guess my main point is the most likely way a virus is going to come into your home is if someone who's an infected person comes into your home, right? So again, this is why we're all practicing social distancing right now, and why we're all staying in our homes as much as possible. The second most likely way I think the virus is going to come in would be on fingers or hands. And so that's, again, why I'm going to repeat the message. It's a really good idea to practice good hand washing. If you've got hand sanitizer, you can use that as well. And then the third tip related to those two things is if you if you find yourself washing your hands more than usual and your hands are feeling dried out, get a good brand of moisturizer that you like and then use that. And then also realize if your hands are clean, if they're not visibly soiled with dirt, you can alternate hand washing with using hand sanitizer. Many of these hand sanitizers have formulations that actually help to moisturize your skin. So do take care of your hands, because if they get dry and chapped, they're harder to clean, and they're harder to wash. So keep your hands healthy.
Healthy and very clean.
Yes.
That sounds great. Don, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Keeley.
Donald Schaffner is a professor of food science at Rutgers University. He also hosts the podcast Food Safety Talk, and his research includes predictive food microbiology, hand washing, and cross-contamination. It's time for Wisconsin Life Now. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about an historic Wisconsin dish.
Is there really anything better than a buttery, flaky pastry filled with meat and vegetables, or perhaps just vegetables for our vegetarian friends? The pasty has long been a staple in certain Wisconsin communities and has a rich history with a particular group of workers. Jane Jensky went to learn more about the role of pasties in Wisconsin history.
Imagine this. It's early morning in a small Wisconsin town about a century ago. The sun hasn't risen, but parents bustle around the kitchen. They're making pasties. One's for Dad, who's preparing for a day in the mines. Some are for the children, who are about to head to their one-room schoolhouse. The extras are for Mom to warm up for dinner tonight. The pasty is convenient, handheld, and delicious. It's a flaky, buttery pastry, folded over, pinched at the crust, bursting with meat and vegetables. The more traditional fillings might include beef, rutabagas, onions, and potatoes.
Okay, we do two of the Greek.
Joe's Pasty Shop has been making these savory pies for decades. Jessica Lapachin opened a location in Rhinelander 15 years ago. She talks about the business's history while her husband Larry chops onions.
So Joe's Pasty Shop is a third generation pasty business. My family opened up Joe's Pasty Shop in Ironwood, Michigan in 1946.
Miners from Cornwall, England flocked to Wisconsin in the 1800s. They settled in places like Mineral Point and Miner's Grove, as more lead was needed for things like paint, pipes, and lead shot. Cornish miners brought their mining expertise for extracting galena, which is a mineral used to make lead. They also brought a piece of their European culture, the pasty.
It's a portable meal that the Cornish miners would have taken down into the mine, a handheld meal that they could hold with dirty hands, and they would hang on to the crimp of the crust, eat the center, and throw the crimp away.
While the pasties kept the miners nourished, they also thought the scraps could bring them good luck.
So there's a superstition in mining culture of these spirits that live in the mine. They're called Tommyknockers. And so they would do things like move tools around or hide things from the miners. And so, the miners started to think, well, we have to appease them. Let's give them the crust of our pasties. So they would toss that into the corners of the mine. So,
when the demand for lead decreased in southwestern Wisconsin, many Cornish miners moved to the Upper Peninsula to work in copper and iron mines. Pasties became a family tradition, passed on from generation to generation. Lapachin says hers isn't the only family with a pasty story.
And it's a very familiar, memorable food for people. People are really passionate about their favorite pasty and their pasty stories and the way their grandmother made them.
Inside Joe's is regular customer LJ Summers. He didn't grow up with pasties and had his first one when he moved to Rhinelander.
In the past year since I've lived in the neighborhood, and everybody was like, you need to go get a pasty. And so I did, and I've been hooked ever since.
Summers is now a pasty fanatic. He can't stay away from the shop for more than a week.
I like the Greek pasty a lot. That's definitely my favorite. And then my new favorite recently is the Cornish one, because that one goes unannounced. Like, I feel like nobody pays attention to it because of the rutabagas. People are scared of rutabagas.
Even after the fall of the mining era in Wisconsin, people's love of pasties lives on.
Oh, there's something about your pasty. There's something about your pasty. There's something about your pasty that is fine, fine, fine.
That story about pasties in Wisconsin came from Jane Jensky. She's a UW-Madison student working on an internship for Wisconsin Life and Wisconsin 101, which tells the history of the state through objects. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast feed. And find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And the morning show continues here on this Wednesday. Up next, we have U.S. Representative Gwen Moore joining the program, and we're taking your questions for her, including those on COVID-19. Email ideas at WPR.org now. And as the impact of COVID-19 grows in Wisconsin, WPR is bringing you coverage of the latest developments from our reporters around the state. We've also added additional state news updates throughout the day each weekday. You can hear them right after NPR News at the top of each hour. Also, find the latest at WPR.org/COVID. Up next is news. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent. And United States Representative Gwen Moore is with us for the next half an hour. We're talking about the federal response to COVID-19 and how she's advocating for Wisconsin's needs, especially as hospitals and clinics report they expect to run out of supplies as a surge of patients need care. You're part of this conversation. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. What do you think Congress should be doing in this fight against the spread of the new coronavirus? What would you like to see happen? And what do you want Representative Moore to know about your community? 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email at ideas@WPR.org. Gwen Moore is a Democratic U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 4th District. She represents parts of the Milwaukee metro region. Moore served in Congress since she was elected in 2004. Congresswoman, thank you for being with us again on The Morning Show.
Hey, thanks for having me. This
Certainly.
Is Keely.
Yes. Every branch of government right now sending out directives, making rules for what people can't or shouldn't do right now. What do you see as the role of the federal government in this coronavirus outbreak?
Well, Keely, to tell you the truth, the federal government is the only agency that really can execute a coordinated plan. I have been on many calls with the Democratic caucus, and they've talked about the conundrum that states are facing. They're bidding, for example, on PPE, personal protective equipment, the gloves and robes and masks, and they're competing with each other for it. And then FEMA comes along, and so the prices can be raised because they can outbid them. And it's true that special interests actually enjoy and appreciate this sort of price gouging. And I think it's a reason that we have seen the president be very reluctant to fully execute the defense procurement powers that he has, because it's beneficial to business. And so I think the federal government has got to be that impartial player. They can make sure that price gouging doesn't occur and that equipment is really deployed at places where it's needed most and in a timely manner.
You're a member of the Ways and Means Committee, which is a really powerful committee. What do you see your role as a representative from Wisconsin right now? How can you advocate for the needs of our state?
Thanks for that question, Keely. I mean, I'm really proud to be a part of the Ways and Means Committee. I mean, that's a committee that really leaned into the tax provisions of the bill. And the unemployment compensation, the expansion of unemployment compensation to include those workers who aren't ordinarily covered by unemployment insurance, those sort of gig workers, as it were, people who work at bars and restaurants, to enable them to receive the unemployment insurance. And to make sure that we get benefits to adults, taxpayers, and people who have had no tax liability but who are adults, $1,200 per person and $500 for children under 17, and really still working behind the scenes to try to make sure that we can get these monies to people as efficiently as possible. Right now, if you are, if you filed a tax return in 2018 or 2019 electronically, you will be able to automatically, and if you've provided your bank routing information, you can get your monies in perhaps, I would say, 3 weeks. But if you have to fill out a short form or take other measures to get the money, then it could be up to 4 months before you get the money. And so that concerns me, because originally the original bill enabled folks who were on Social Security to be able to automatically get these $1,200 payments, and now this is being interpreted somehow. In the Republican bill, where folks who are on Social Security will have to take that extra step and fill out a second form.
But, I do wonder about, sort of, Congresswoman, if I might interrupt, these one-time payments, certainly a cash infusion can help families that are struggling, people who've lost jobs or have hours cut. And at the same time, these are just one-time payments. I mean, are there better ways that the federal government, that Congress should be helping people who are losing jobs or struggling to make ends meet right now?
Oh, absolutely. These are all one-time payments, but we were able, as a Democrat, I can say we were really proud to have moved the needle to provide these unemployment benefits for up to 4 weeks, 4 months, I'm sorry. And so those are more than one-time payments. In addition to that, we've provided another $600 a month in connection with the state unemployment insurance to supplement unemployment payments. And of course, the legislation also provides monies to the states for unemployment benefits as well. We've also put monies in the bill to help state and local governments, nonprofits, small businesses, really trying to incentivize businesses to retain employees. We provide a quote-unquote forgivable loan such that businesses can borrow monies, and if they use it to pay rent or mortgage or to retain employees, to provide salaries, then these loans can be forgiven. And so there are other steps. You know, this is by far not enough, Keeley, but these are additional things that we've done besides the one-time-only payment. We've also added monies to our food security programs, to our SNAP program. We have an expanded eligibility, but we're mindful of the urgency that this will cause, and trying to make sure that it benefits sort of leech onto to members of the community who aren't necessarily connected as taxpayers.
Glenn Moore is a Democratic U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 4th District, which includes parts of Milwaukee. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. You can also email your questions, your thoughts for the Congresswoman at ideas@WPR.org. And Representative Moore, Mark from Wisconsin Dells wants to join our conversation now. Welcome, Mark.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. The reason I'm calling is because I had a texting war, actually, with my neighbors who were exposed through their son who lives with them, who works in a hospital and was sent home on quarantine because he was exposed to a patient. They both got sick, but continue to go out into the public, hiking on state parks and going to the grocery store because they say it's only pneumonia. They went to the hospital with not being able to breathe, and they were told it's only a pneumonia. And then they just said, okay, we can go to the store now because it's only pneumonia. We have that situation, and then we have all the people from Illinois who have come up to vacation since they are stay at home. So they're staying in Wisconsin instead, depleting our grocery stores. But I called the sheriff's departments, health departments, and state police, and I was told we are not enforcing stay-at-home in Wisconsin. I guess most people aren't, but it seems to me that if we have a lot of non-compliance and we don't enforce it, that we're sort of spitting in the wind.
Yeah, okay. Mark, we appreciate the question, and Congresswoman,
response. Mark, you make an excellent point. One of the things that we have learned from the Asian cultures that have dealt with this pandemic before it moved over here is that really people self-policing themselves and really caring and being concerned about their elders and neighbors and using and imposing that self-discipline is what has led to a flattening of the curve. I think one of the biggest mistakes that has been made around this pandemic in the United States and why we're the epicenter now is because we've been in denial for so long. We first learned about this in January. We could even forgive, I guess, the administration for sending, the protective equipment over to China to deal with their pandemic then and simply closing the borders, because we had already seen a case emerge in the state of Washington at that point. And so the longer we were in denial about this pandemic and not encouraging people by example and self-discipline is the reason that we have seen this become, United States become the epicenter of the pandemic. And so, no, police are not enforcing it, because how many police would you need to make everybody do what they need to do? They need to take it seriously. This is the next couple of weeks here in the state of Wisconsin is predicted, according to the scientific models. If you don't believe in anything else, we'll try to believe in science now. The next couple of weeks are going to be really, really a very toxic time. And so, new CDC advice at this point is if you can cover your mouth, even if it's not a traditional mask, maybe, cover your mouth and make sure that you practice good hand sanitation. I mean, I've got you could have your, my daughter literally had a bucket of, had bleach, a towel with bleach water
trying
on
to,
it that
yeah,
she
trying
wiped
to keep
the handles of grocery carts.
Yeah, we'll be just back in a moment here on The Morning Show with U.S. Representative Gwen Moore. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network. Wisconsin has received a second shipment of personal protective equipment from the national stockpile. That's according to U.S. News & World Report. The supplies are meant for emergency workers and people who serve in hospitals, clinics, nursing homes, and assisted living facilities. We're talking with U.S. Representative Gwen Moore here on The Morning Show, and a shortage of protective masks and ventilators is just one aspect of our conversation about COVID-19. I'm Keely Boltina, and there's a line for you at 1-800-642-1234. Are you worried about healthcare right now, maybe the economy, or is something else on your mind? What do you want the Congresswoman to know? 800-642-1234. And Congresswoman Moore, on that shortage of ventilators, personal protective equipment, testing kits, you mentioned that the Trump administration, you said, was hesitant to enforce some of the opportunities like the Defense Production Act to increase production of these things. What, as a member of Congress, can you do to help states try to get this material?
Well, this is a power that the president has right now, and we need him to execute that power. I mean, fortunately, we're seeing some influx of equipment from China at this point, because at one point, you know, President Trump sent through our USAID, 17.8 tons of equipment, including ventilators and PPEs, over to China at the beginning of their pandemic. And basically, that was a decision I think was made, a calculation. I would speculate that we could somehow contain the virus in China and close the borders and send the equipment over there. And so we really lost a lot of time because at that same point, we had governors like Governor Inslee in the state of Washington at the simultaneously begging for equipment. And so time is of the essence, as they would say. And so right now, scientists have said that we're sort of working behind the curve. And so as soon as we sort of mitigate and really come to terms with our own behavior, and really, you know, let the president know that we can't continue to wait. The president has got to stop listening to industry, who would love to take capital advantage of our current situation, and make them produce it. They could produce these gowns. This is this stuff can be produced with the execution of those powers, and the president is really relying on volunteer efforts. And we shouldn't have high school kids making face masks. I mean, it's cute, but it's not what we need right now.
Transitioning a bit, COVID-19 is on the minds of a lot of people, as more than a dozen states have made the decision to postpone their presidential primaries. And Wisconsin is not one of those. Our primary is next week on Tuesday. What's your take on this? Because there are some high stakes for your party, the Democratic Party here.
Well, there are high stakes for all citizens. There really is, and I think that, of course, we didn't see the pandemic coming, and there are lawsuits all over the place. Folks who want to have the election, people who want it delayed. I think there was a decision, a Dane County decision, just recently thrown out.
Oh, that was yesterday, yes, that where the judge overruled the position of the clerk that people could bypass voter ID by saying they were indefinitely confined.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because this will put a chilling impact on people being able to do same-day voting. There was a request by Governor Evers to have the legislature send every single registered voter an absentee ballot just automatically. And the Republican majority declined that offer, saying, oh, no, we don't have time to do that. And so it is a hot mess. I think, we're having a lot of trouble getting clerks, usually older people who volunteer to do this and have done it for years. And so, of course, understandably, it'd be hard to get them to volunteer at this time. I mean, maybe this would be an opportunity to deploy the National Guard in some of these areas where there are absolutely no poll workers. They could get some training from some of these elderly people on what to do prior to Election Day. I mean, I'm throwing ideas out. And maybe there will be some court intervention sometime during the week where we'll be able to extend the days for absentee voting or for the election, to extend the election. But it is a hot mess. But I do think that there's a lot at stake. We have a Supreme Court, statewide Supreme Court race going. And it really matters, and it matters a lot, who you put on the state Supreme Court. I think we have local races in the city of Milwaukee. Our mayor is being contested this time. We have an open seat on the county board. We have a contested city attorney's race and a couple of circuit court branch races that need to be filled, and all of our aldermanic seats. And we're transforming Milwaukee in some ways. Re-upping with some people, but we have a lot at stake here. And I think that if we deployed some emergency resources in here, we might be able to use technology so that people could get cell phone calls when it's safe to come, when there won't be many people voting, ward by ward, calling half the ward. I mean, there are things that some of our technological geniuses may be able to come up with. I'm the congresswoman, and I applied for an absentee ballot, and I haven't gotten mine yet. So there's a huge demand on absentee ballots, and so it is pretty scary. Now, I live literally one block. I live on the same block as my polling place, which is not the case for most people. And if I have to, I'll put on my one mask that I've used over and over and over again to go and vote if I don't get that ballot. But that's me.
Sure. One more thing, Congresswoman. A few weeks ago, you came in contact with someone who had COVID-19. So you socially isolated, following those CDC guidelines. And health officials have said that kind of policy keeps Wisconsin's health system from being overwhelmed. But we're seeing the economic consequences. How do you think the state can balance those two factors, health and, making money so people can feed their families, pay rent?
And it's a balance that we are trying to, and I must say, on a bipartisan basis, trying to address. We're trying to not make people make choices between living, their grandmother's living, their loved ones living, and making a living. I just want to say, Keeley, that I am sorrowful for the one-time only payments, and so that we're already looking at a stimulus package, a fourth stimulus package, and I think we'll have to try to uplift people with further dollars down the line. But we are trying to make it as comfortable as possible for people to stay in their homes with this immediate infusion of cash, not just to middle-class people or taxpayers, but to every adult we can identify. And so there are going to be resources where people can use their cell phones or go online and really fill out a short form to get these dollars so that they don't have to choose between their income and their lives. We've put more money into community health centers and putting more money into protective gear, and this is another reason I'm appealing to the president and people in his party to appeal to them to get the president to use his powers to produce this personal protective equipment. These people are the front line soldiers in this war.
Right. Congresswoman Moore, thank you so much for joining us. Gwen Moore is a Democratic U.S. representative from Wisconsin's 4th District, and she's also a member of the Ways and Means Committee. I'm Keeley Boltina. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.